L'Officine Universelle Bully presents Ancient Beauty Rituals. Episode 1, A Date with the Emperor. Special Morning Beauty Routine of Young Cassian in 10 BC Rome. Cassia woke up with a smile that morning in the Emperor Augustus's city of Rome. A mild wind was dancing outside her house, a beautiful domus built on the Palatine Hill near the Temple of Apollo. She opened her eyes, luxuriating in her ivory and bronze bed for a moment and listening to the sounds of her household waking up. Her happy dream was present in her mind, and was a good prediction for what was awaiting her today. Life was an everyday struggle in Rome, even for a wealthy person like her, but she'd always managed to survive after 32 years and was happy. Today, her life was about to take a fantastic turn. Cassia poked her head out of her cubiculum, her bedroom. Her eyes were dazzled by the sun streaming down through the atrium, which was making the water in the fountain pool sparkle. "You there," Cassia called to a servant at the far edge. "Send Phoebe to me at once." Soon, her favourite ornatrix Phoebe was with her, carrying a large wooden cosmetics box. Phoebe was well known across the Roman Empire. She'd been travelling from Mauritania to Mesopotamia, from Londinium to Alexandria for nearly 4 decades, catering to wealthy women, gathering beauty knowledge and confidences of all sorts. Her large cosmetic box was filled with aromas, rarities and wonders from the Orient and the Occident. She had seen the most diverse and beautiful faces in the empire and knew every skin undertone's little secret, and granted every woman's wish. A few years ago, she decided to settle in Rome and was staying at Cassia's house as an ornatrix in residence this spring. Phoebe knew Cassia had been invited to sit with the Emperor and his family in the imperial box at the chariot races this afternoon and wanted to make an impression. "Salve, Phoebe, how are you today?" said Cassia. Then she added, with a malicious smile, "Do you have any fresh news?" Phoebe was an incurable gossip, Cassia knew, and always had her ear to the ground everywhere she went for new scandals. "Why, yes, madam." Phoebe looked mischievous. "Do you remember young Marcus, who had such a crush on you not so long ago?" "Oh, gods, yes." Marcus had been most persistent, sending Cassia love poetry and hanging about the front door at all hours, trying to catch a glimpse of her. He was handsome, with mournful black eyes, but Cassia had never cared for him, and to her relief, he'd at last given up. "Who's he persecuting now?" "I heard he ran off with Eppia." "Not the senator's wife?" "The very same. Although how he can stand that woman's bark, Venus herself knows. They say the two of them are sailing for Greece. The senator is beside himself, naturally. He divorced her this very day and might bring an adultery charge. That would be expensive. And they say he's so angry that he condemned his wife's servant girl to death in the arena." "Melissa?" Cassia shuddered. She knew it was childish not to be able to view executions in the arena, but she'd never cared for any of the various imaginative ways in which the Romans put criminals to death. "I'm sure she had no idea. Perhaps. And did you hear about Claudia and her quarrel with the actor Arbusculus?" Phoebe prattled on as she set out jars of skin creams. Her mother had been an ornatrix and had impressed upon her that care of the complexion was very important. Cassia, therefore, submitted to having her face washed with donkey's milk to make her skin glow and remove wrinkles. Phoebe then applied a thin layer of honey to her face, which was said to purify and make the skin glow. After that had been wiped off, Phoebe cleansed Cassia's face with a toner made of rose leaves and poppy, and next took out a jar of oisepum, grease extracted from sheep's wool. "Oof," said Cassia, wrinkling her nose. "Yes, madam, I know, but it works, Phoebe reminded her. Not that there weren't all sorts of bad odours in the great city itself. The crocks set into the ground at intervals along the streets by fullers to collect urine sometimes broke and spilled their foul contents over the paving stones. Butchers killed and dismembered their animals in front of their shops and left the entrails in the thoroughfares to be cleaned up by scavenging dogs. Too, sometimes, dogs would collect less than savoury souvenirs from the homeless paupers who died in the streets. Out in the market this morning to buy a jewelled comb for her collection, Phoebe thought she'd seen a dog carrying a human hand in its mouth. She shuddered at the memory. Cassia nibbled on some bread and olives for breakfast while the grease sank into her skin, careful not to let any of the cream drip into her wine goblet. After Phoebe had removed the grease, she trimmed Cassia's nails short with a toilet knife. Besides donkey's milk, grease extract from sheep's wool and crocodile's dung, other animal-based products were used in Roman antiquity. Women's complexions were generally ravaged by poor sanitation, disease, and the effects of lead and mercury in makeup, and several substances were reported to give a glowing complexion. Ground oyster shells smoothed the skin. Pimples could be removed by a mixture of poultry fat and onion. Wrinkles were smoothed away with swan's fat. The ash of snails was reported to banish freckles. Skin creams were also made from the fat of a sow who had not littered, or the jelly of a bull's calf bone, which also contributed to the skin's glow. Next came teeth cleaning. Cassia was lucky. Her teeth were small and even and had not yet begun to fall out, so she never had to resort to false teeth as so many of her friends had, or the Empress Livia, so rumour had it. But, Cassia reflected, that woman's weasel-like appearance hadn't prevented her from seducing the Emperor Augustus when they were both still married to other people. Could it really be true that Livia had been big with her previous husband's child on their wedding day? How delicious. She must remember to ask her cousin Pomponia, whose former servant Glycera now worked in the imperial household. So important to have friends in high places. Phoebe handed her a pot of powdered animal horn and a stick from the citron tree, the end of which had been chewed and frayed so Cassia could clean her teeth. In an age before fluoride and sophisticated dental practices, Roman teeth were subject to a great deal of disease, decay, wear and tear. Single false teeth of bone or wood could be purchased but were not natural looking and had to be anchored with gold wire to their neighbours. Abrasive tooth powders could be made of any number of ingredients, including powdered shell, horn or even glass. The toothbrush, as we know it, was a much later invention, and it's assumed that the Romans used chewing sticks, a small stick from a tree which had been chewed and frayed at one end and used for cleaning the teeth. After this, Phoebe took out a tablet of Caruso, white lead, from the cosmetics box. She cut off a corner with her toilet knife and ground it into a powder with a mortar and pestle, adding a bit of vinegar to moisten it. She carefully rubbed this into Cassia's skin. Look how smooth and matte your skin is now, said Phoebe. White lead reportedly had properties of smoothing the face and removing blemishes. Ironic, inasmuch as the continued use of white lead in foundations and creams probably led to the swift disappearance of youthful skin. Skin treated with poisonous white lead soon lost its youthful tone. Comparative evidence suggests skin became sallow, rough, scarred, and spotted. And the continued use of white lead could even bring about an early death. This ancient cosmetic therefore both contributed to and skillfully concealed the devastation of the complexion. Which rouge today, madam? Phoebe asked. Cassia was busy turning her head this way and that, as a small servant child held a bronze mirror in front of her. The crocodilea, I think, replied Cassia. Phoebe took out a small onyx box filled with a reddish cream and said, This rouge has been imported from Egypt at great expense. Mind you, it might smell worse than the sheep's grease. Would you like to know what the main ingredient is? I'd rather not, said Cassia. Phoebe chuckled and applied the processed crocodile dung onto Cassia's cheekbones. I wonder if the Queen of Egypt used this, Cassia mused as Phoebe worked. I think Pomponia has a copy of Cleopatra's beauty manual. We must ask to borrow it. Why would you want to look like that serpent? She caused enough trouble for Rome. Egypt is very in at the moment, as you well know. Everyone who's anyone is having an allotic fresco painted in their atrium or put on the floor in mosaic. And look what Father gave me. She held up her wrist, from which dangled a tiny emerald scarab beetle on a golden chain. I would love to have a copy of that beauty manual. Do you suppose she'd reveal the secret of how she seduced Mark Antony? Maybe it was the way she lined her eyes. Or perhaps it was a magic spell. Green or black coal today, madam? Phoebe asked, resolutely ignoring Cassia. Phoebe had never trusted that Egyptian queen. Cassia considered. She was wearing an expensive tunic and matching mantle. White silk shot through with threads of real purple. The black, she decided. Phoebe took out the cylindrical blue glass coal tube from her kit, uncorked it, and after moistening her wooden dipping rod with scented oil, pushed it into the cylinder. She brought it out downy with coal and lined Cassia's eyes. There, said Phoebe, a goddess has freshly risen. Coal was used by ancient Egyptians and was made from soot, lampblack, or antimony sulfide, or green malachite, a powder made from copper, which was bright green. The Egyptians believed coal reduced the chance of eye infections and improved poor eyesight, and that the heavily lined eye had the power to combat evil, since it evoked the symbolic eye of Horus, also outlined in coal. While the Romans did not attach these beliefs to coal, Roman women did use this cosmetic, and the cylindrical coal tube, sometimes divided into sections for coal colours, and the scented oil used to apply it, was also in use. And now, your eyebrows. I despair of them, you know. Cassia hid a smile. I know, Phoebe. We'll use the false ones today. On they went, applied with sticky glue, long and beautiful. They almost met between her eyes. As a finishing touch, Cassia selected a tiny piece of crescent-shaped black leather. This was pasted onto her face near her mouth. Perfect, Cassia exclaimed, catching a glimpse of herself in the mirror. Phoebe helped her dress, then brought a glass bottle over to her mistress. Not the rose today, Phoebe. Something more dramatic, said Cassia. The one from that new perfume shop owned by Cosmos. Cosmos was a Greek who'd swept into town one summer and established the most costly perfume shop on the Wikus Unguentarius. The front room of the shop was beautifully painted and decorated, and one could sit and sample various perfumes on the back of the hand before making a selection. But on a visit there one day, Cassia had glimpsed the back room, where employees were chopping up spices and stripping flowers of their petals, and another feverishly stirred a cauldron of olive oil, bringing it to a bubble before the aromatic ingredients were thrown in. Cosmos's blended creations were expensive and all the rage in Rome at present. Phoebe selected another bottle and extracted the perfume out of its long neck with a dipstick and applied it to Cassia's neck and wrists. And a spicy scent of cinnamon, myrrh, and lily filled the small bedchamber. Fashions in perfume changed rapidly, and ingredients and unguents came from all over the Roman Empire. From the east came myrrh, frankincense, ginger, cassia, and cinnamon oil. Other popular exotic aromatic ingredients from the east included bennut oil and tejpat, exceedingly expensive. We also hear of spikenard, myrrh, and saffron used as personal scents. Egypt in general was renowned for its perfumed and aromatic oils. Some Egyptian plants from which essences were extracted were lily, cypress, violet, narcissus, myrtle, and rose. Some perfumes were oil-based and liquid, others were more of a paste. Perfumed powders were also known. Nor was perfumed oil gendered. Both men and women used it. The moderate use of perfume for both sexes was equated with the civilized urban dweller. Persons who did not wear them were considered to be rustic and unsophisticated. Phoebe helped Cassia on with her long tunic and mantle, and then sat her back down on the high back chair. The usual, madam? Phoebe asked, taking up an ivory comb. A little more curl today, I think, replied Cassia. Phoebe took out the metal calamistrum and carefully placed it in the glowing brazier in the corner of Cassia's bedroom. As it heated, she separated Cassia's long dark hair into two parts and tied them up in a square knot at the top of her head, securing it with the jeweled comb she'd purchased that morning. Careful, madam, said Phoebe as she used a thick cloth to take the calamistrum out of the embers. Don't move. She began to twist strands of Cassia's hair around the heated rod, and soon there was a cloud of ringlets on top of Cassia's head. Murmured Cassia, not really listening. She was examining the contents of her jewellery box, finally settling on a pair of golden earrings with an arrangement of dangling pearls which tinkled prettily when she turned her head, and an elegant necklace of pearls and unfaceted emeralds. Beautiful, pronounced Phoebe, when she'd clasped it around Cassia's neck. You are the beloved of Venus herself. She gave her mistress a small ball of amber to carry in her hands to release its delicious scent and tied the thongs of her delicate leather sandals. Cassia was ready.
You have listened to the first episode of Beauty Rituals Through the Centuries from Officine Universelle Bully. You'll soon find a new story that will take you on a journey through time. Our podcasts are available on all listening platforms.